This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. I'm Shahad Kutin, and with me, Julian Ng. And on the line, we have Sholto Burns, a senior fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies in Kuala Lumpur. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mr. Burns.
My pleasure.
Okay, the reason we're having you on air, of course, is the announcement yesterday of that Britain is going to the polls on June the 8th. But maybe we could begin with some of the mechanics. Unlike Malaysia, I believe that the British prime ministers of the parties in power cannot willy-nilly call a snap election. And they are constrained by something called the Fixed Term Parliamentary Act, which requires them to go to the House of Commons or their parliament and get a vote of two-thirds or a support of two-thirds of the members of the House to pass the motion, in which case, because the Conservatives do not have a big majority in the House of Commons, they're going to need the support of opposition parties. What do you think is going to happen in this scenario?
I think the opposition parties, or two of the main opposition parties, the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats, have already indicated that they will support this. And I think that's because they have to, really, because Theresa May has called this ostensibly to have a proper vote on the terms of Brexit. So it would seem very anti-democratic if they didn't vote in favour of the people having their say on that. But secondly, just to say that, you know, the Fixed Terms Act is a very recent innovation. It only came in under the coalition government under David Cameron. So it's not really a long part of British history. And I think, in fact, that what Theresa May is doing is likely to consign the Fixed Terms Act to history. It's always been a tradition in Britain that it's the Prime Minister's prerogative to call a general election whenever he or she wants, which, of course, gives them an advantage. That's exactly what Theresa May is doing at the moment.
So the Conservative Party has an advantage, is a 20-point lead in the polls. Some detractors or critics are saying that this is a somewhat opportunistic move, considering that she has, over the last year or so, said that she would not take this route. She would not call for general elections. How does she square this circle?
Well, of course, it's opportunistic. But I think that's to be expected in politicians. I think it's a surprise because, as you say, she had said that she would not call a snap general election. Her justification for doing so is that the British people voted for Brexit. She feels that the will of the people is being frustrated by the action, particularly in the House of Lords, which doesn't have a Conservative majority. Which, in fact, is probably really against Brexit. The House of Lords can't actually stop anything from happening, but it can delay and delay and delay. And so I think her justification would be, and it is, in fact, that the country has decided what it wants to do in terms of the EU, but Westminster is divided. And so she is seeking a fresh mandate from the people on her terms for Brexit.
But the vote on Brexit was fairly close. Some people will say that if the Conservatives win this election overwhelmingly, and if the 20-point lead is an indication of that, that it would mean that she can run a roughshod over the concerns of the Remainers, the 48% of Britain that voted to remain within the EU, as well as Scotland and Northern Ireland, also where the Remain vote was very, very strong. Is it likely that with this mandate, she's actually going to create deeper divisions within society that are not going to go away just because people have voted a stronger Conservative government into power?
I think you make a good point. Scotland in particular will be very unhappy with this. But, the British tradition has always been that if you win a parliamentary majority, I'm afraid, that's that. And it's perhaps difficult for people in Malaysia to understand, because I know historically, of course, until the last general election, the government has always won, over 50% of the vote. But that's not the case in lots of first-past-the-post parliamentary democracies. David Cameron won his last victory on 37.5% of the vote. Tony Blair won his last victory as Labour leader on only 35% of the vote. And people winning elections on those results still govern as though they have an absolute majority, which if they have that in the House of Commons, that's frankly all that counts. And however she wins the majority, and she will win it on a healthy percentage of the vote, it won't be anywhere near 50%, but maybe it might be in the low 40s, which is high for Britain historically. She will govern that she has the mandate of the people. She will say, I ask the people, do you want to elect a Conservative government that wants a hard Brexit? And if they say yes, and she gets a healthy majority, which she almost certainly will, then that's all that she will need to go ahead in as tough a terms as she wants to.
So, Sholto, this is Julian. If the Labour Party would deliver Theresa May the two-thirds that are required to call this snap election, this is going to be as close as we can get to a one-issue election. What do you think the other opposition parties or the main opposition party would talk about in this election? Is it just going to be smooth sailing to accept that the issue is just Brexit, or is there anything else?
I do think that's going to be the main issue, and I think it's something that the Liberal Democrats are going to make a lot of. They're positioning themselves as the only party in Britain, or the only substantial party in Britain, that is actually arguing for a soft Brexit and for the best terms possible with the EU. Because of their disastrous results of the last general election, it would be easy for some people to write them off, but that shouldn't be done, because historically they've always managed to get somewhere between 15 and 25% of the vote. So in terms of the popular vote, that's a significant amount. They are expecting to claw back quite a few seats. In fact, Conservative internal party polling has suggested that seats that the Conservatives won from the Lib Dems in Cornwall and the London suburb are very vulnerable. So the Lib Dems will be making a lot of that. I think in terms of other parties, yes, Labour is going to do disastrously. The SNP, of course, is currently the third biggest party in Parliament, in UK Parliament.
That's the Scottish Nationalist Party.
Yeah, the Scottish Nationalist Party. But they had such a high watermark at the last general election that I can't really see that they're going to increase any seats. They will make a big thing about constitutional issues and make a lot of noise about saying that Scotland did not vote for Brexit, and the people of Scotland are being ignored. I think they may be right, and they will be ignored. I think it is going to be about Brexit. I can't really see anything else other than, I'm afraid, Conservatives making hay with the state of disarray of the Labour Party.
So, Sholto, I also want to talk about how the other elections in the rest of the EU are coming up. For example, the French one is this weekend, and the German elections are upcoming. Do you see these elections sort of spoilers in a way of stymieing the Brexit discussion? How much of a spoilers are these other elections that are going on?
Do you mean spoilers in terms of UK discourse?
Just the whole mechanics and the whole monumental task of negotiating the exit, given that the French and German elections would complicate the whole discussion.
Well, I think one of the reasons why Theresa May have chosen to go for this date of the election is that it coincides with the French electoral process, which is, a two-round presidential election. Because the view is that while France is having its election, and then later when Germany has its election, not an awful lot is going to happen in terms of negotiations between Britain and the EU. Because with France and Germany being such key players in the EU, until it's clear what the leadership is in those two countries, the EU itself is not going to have, it would be difficult for them to go too far forward in negotiations until France and Germany have had their elections too. In terms of what it means for the EU, I think you're seeing in France, obviously with Marine Le Pen and the National Front, and also the candidate of the right, François Fillon, who's been held in the water a little bit by a scandal, but he was still a strong Conservative candidate. A much more Eurosceptic line coming through in France, and that may feed in to an extent into the EU. Germany is different, of course, different internal machinations. But I think the overall worry, in a sense, is whether the EU is actually taking on board the lessons of Brexit, not just of Brexit, but of populations around Europe that frankly have soured on this idea of ever closer political union, which was always an elite project that did not bring the peoples of Europe with them.
Finally, Mr. Burns, are you personally optimistic about what's going to come out of Brexit?
Yes, I am. I think there was a lot of doom mongering before the campaign and the vote. There were all sorts of dire predictions that Britain was going to, fall off the cliff if the vote was no. I think that when Brexit actually happens, there probably will be a period of disruption in Britain, and it won't be particularly easy. And I'm afraid I don't think the EU is going to help make it particularly easy, which is actually against the EU's own interests. But interestingly, there was a PricewaterhouseCoopers study recently about the world in 2050, and it predicted that after Britain had left the EU, it was actually likely to enjoy considerably higher rates of growth over the next 20 or 30 years than certainly the Eurozone or the EU as a whole.
Thank you very much. That was Sholto Burns, a senior fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies. We'll be back with more business news after this at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.